The sun has left and forgotten me. It's dark, I cannot see.
Your stories don't define you, but how you tell them will. Hi, I'm Sarah Elkins, your host and chief storymaker at Elkins Consulting. Listeners, you know, if you've been listening to any of these episodes, that the stories we share say a lot about who we are. It changes how people perceive us, depending on the stories that we share. And just as importantly, they change our internal dialogue, our internal messages, depending on how we share the things that happened with us, to us, in our lives. And today, you're going to hear some great stories from another storyteller, somebody who focuses intensely on the narrative stories that we tell each other and tell ourselves. And I know you're going to enjoy this episode featuring Kirsten Blake. Kirsten, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Sarah. I'm really excited for our conversation.
Me too. I always love it when I'm introduced to people by somebody else that I trust. And we'll have Katrina's LinkedIn information in the show notes associated with this podcast, along with all of the links to your work. So yes, I'm always excited to chat with somebody that I was introduced to by somebody that I trust.
Yeah, I know. It's always just a good starting point, right?
It is.
Katrina has wonderful things to say about you. So thank you for taking the time to talk. Yeah.
Yes. You know, I was just this morning thinking about how much I appreciate when people introduce me to other people that I might not see the reason right away, but I trust certain people to know me sometimes better than I know me. Mm. Do you ever see that?
I do, yeah. And sometimes, you know, it's surprising, you know, you're like, oh, interesting. That's not something I would have guessed or just to be seen in that moment.
Right.
Yeah, it's really heart filling. And I don't know, I think it's something we need more of is just connecting each other to one another. Because even if it's just, you know, a small moment to find those similarities or have a conversation, even if it doesn't result in something major, I think we need more of it. I think it's so well worth it.
I agree. And the people that other people that I love that introduce me to, I'm always pleasantly, I guess surprised not is not the word, but I just love knowing how somebody else perceived me in order to introduce me to someone else.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's so helpful. I don't know, I'm thinking of my niece when she left kindergarten last year. One of the things the teacher had them do was she had a big piece of poster board and put their picture in the middle and all the students wrote something nice about them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she was 6 at the time and just how much that meant to her to see how her peers saw her and the nice things they said about her. And it's hanging in her room to this day. And it made me think about, we need to do that more as adults, right? Like just to tell people, you know, whether it be strangers or our friends or our family, the things we notice about them, because it means so much and it allows us to see ourselves in a different way.
Yes, absolutely. I love that. So I always start these conversations by asking somebody to share, asking my guests to share something about themselves that most people might not know about them. And as you probably know, because you've listened to a couple of these episodes, the reason I do that is exactly that. Sometimes when we share something like that, it puts a more complex perspective here for the show, because so many times we hear something from somebody, we see a social post, we have some one-time experience with them, and we've decided who they are based on this one experience. And by asking this question, you get to give our listeners a different perspective from what they would necessarily come up with based on the rest of the conversation.
Yeah, I really do love the question. And it made me kind of pause and have to think about it. And I'm kind of surprised by the first thing that came to mind. So I feel like I should share it because it was surprising to me. What came up was that in second grade, I transferred schools. So I had been going to a private school and our family moved and I started going to the public school. And so, of course, when you start in a new school, they test you to kind of see what where you are, what level you're at. And what they learned is that I didn't really know how to read. And so they had taught me in my previous school in kindergarten and first grade, basically to memorize words versus phonics to sound things out. And so this started a journey for me of, you know, being pulled out of my classroom. Mrs. Curfee was the teacher that pulled me out of regular classroom to teach me. She, you know, to this day is a very special person in my life. But I think why that memory came so quickly is that I don't think it is something that people know about me, the struggle that I had to learn how to read and was almost held back because of that. And how much I think it defined me as a person, to have that struggle, to your point, to like be seen differently, right? Like when you're in second grade and getting pulled out of a classroom, you feel so different and you feel so othered. And so I think it really helped build my empathy skills, my deeper understanding of how people experience struggles. And I ultimately became an educator. And I think that was a foundational piece of why I did. So yeah, I was kind of surprised that that was what came to mind. But I think most people wouldn't know that about me, like those struggles that I had like within my early education. But it was so foundational in who I became.
Wow, that is such an important story. And I love that that popped into your head because it definitely colors how you behave as an adult, having that othered experience of not belonging in a certain area where you felt like you should have belonged.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I think belonging is such an important aspect of my work. And so it's not surprising, right, that that story was what came to mind probably, you know, the more I think about it, because I think it informs so much of what I do, who I became, what's important to me. Yeah. And I think also just having a lot of compassion for little people, you know, we don't tend to always see them as these like little humans, but they are, they're experiencing things, they're going through things. There's a lot going on in their head. And I think as adults, it's really important for us to remember that.
Right. And not to dismiss it. I think I remember one of our sons was probably three and he was really disappointed with something and he was kind of throwing a tantrum, which was unusual for him. And my friend said, "Take it easy. Life's full of disappointments when you're three."
Yeah, it's so true.
Everything, right? Because as adults, we're like, we get disappointed all the time, but we don't sit in it because there are big disappointments, there are little disappointments and big expectations and little expectations that aren't met throughout time, but we find a way to manage them. But at three, everything is a big expectation.
Yeah. You don't know how to regulate yet, right? So it's, yeah. But I think the beautiful thing about kids is they are so in their emotions. And so it's a good reminder for us to learn how to feel our emotions better and to be in them and move through them versus trying to suppress them or push them to the side.
Yes. Spoken like a true educator right there. I hear that. I think it's fascinating that that's the story that came up because so much of what I do in my coaching is uncover those stories that lead us to where we are now so that we can share them. And so people know what matters to us and where it came from. And so many people don't see those, what appear to an adult as a small thing. We don't see it as such an integral part of who we become as adults. So I love that you shared that story. Thank you for sharing that one.
Yeah, thank you for letting me. It's a good reminder.
Well, it is. And I think so much of the time, if we look back at those incidents, I mean, I could imagine one out of however many times you're pulled out of that classroom, I could imagine the one time and how you felt. I mean, I could feel it by the way you told that story. And I'm imagining my elementary school or the elementary school where my boys went and walking through that hallway and seeing a little girl being pulled out of the class for special reading lessons. And so those stories, they really affect who we are. And I can definitely see how this affected you in your career. And if we could just look back at those stories and put it all together and find the pattern about why we do what we do, I think we'd all find a lot more satisfaction in our work.
Yeah, it's interesting. It makes me think of that Steve Jobs quote, which I'll probably butcher and paraphrase here, but that notion of we don't really see how the dots connect until we look backwards. So there's that element of just trusting that, like, as we take each step, they will connect in some way. And it was interesting. It took me a while to realize how stories were kind of the theme in my life. I mean, I was a history major and then became a history teacher. And so I was like, it was always my favorite subject in school. And I'm like, oh yeah, like stories have really been that through line in everything that I do. And yeah, connection is so important to me, and we connect through stories. So it all kind of makes sense when you look backwards, but when you're in it, sometimes it doesn't.
Right. Trust is such a key thing here. And also trusting that it may take you a while to find that pattern to work through that. And I think so many times we have to experience so many different things in order to come back to it fully.
Yeah, that's just it. We have to be in it. And I think sometimes we really avoid being in it because it can feel hard and a little, not great. And we really, as humans, I think want to feel like good and happy and joyful. But I, a mantra I try to live by, I'm not always great at it, being a recovering perfectionist, is life is in the messy. And so we have to let things be messy sometimes in order to really be able to your point, to get to that point, we're able to look backwards.
Yeah, I think we're going to end up coming back to that recovering perfectionist thing. But in the meantime, for our listeners, I think we've been cagey enough that they're probably very curious. Tell me what you do without telling me what you do. And I'm going to ask you to share a story of a recent work interaction that you walked away from feeling really satisfied.
Yeah, so I work a lot with different types of people around our internal stories. So a recent interaction was working with a woman who has experienced a lot of grief in her life, and is really in this space where she's in transition. She's ready to start the next chapter. And helping her kind of see all of the various stories and parts that are living within her that both help and hinder her in kind of stepping into that next chapter. And interestingly, she, kind of identified kind of that younger self that was a teenager that just went after everything, super ambitious, wasn't afraid of anything. And then herself right after her divorce, which was very depleting, which gave her the story that she had to do everything alone, a real scarcity mindset, to what she identified as her higher self, or her crone, her wisdom, and how those three kind of interacted together, their stories and how they worked together. And I could see as she talked about them how she was making connections and really using that wise older crone to help her feel secure and feel ready to step into that next chapter. And she was leaving our session to go like buy a new car. She had been driving the car that was her husband, her ex-husband's. And so just that symbolism of kind of like stepping into a new car that moves you forward and takes you down a new road was so beautiful. And she sent me a picture afterwards of her in her new car, and just getting to see that like brightness as she, acknowledged her own wisdom was really beautiful.
Ah, oh, that's perfect. I love that. The first thing that came to mind was when it had been about, I don't know, 4 or 5 days after a coaching appointment. I was doing StrengthsFinder coaching with somebody, and I got a text message from her saying that she had had a full, what did she say, 4 minute conversation with her 16-year-old son. That was the text she sent me. And of course, being a parent and having a lot of experience with teenage boys, I knew what that meant to her. You know, she had the heart emoji and just that I'm like, oh my gosh, I contributed to this. Their relationship is better for having worked with me. And that, so I'm hearing that in your voice, that sense of relief that what you're doing is working, and also this just gratitude to have the opportunity to be that catalyst or to help more like the fulcrum, you know, tilting one direction or another to be able to help somebody move into that next phase.
Yeah. I mean, I think what part of what grounds me in my work is my belief that as humans, we're not meant to feel alone. And so from the story you shared, right, like by her being able to feel with you, she was then able to go and connect with her son in a new and different way, which is just so lovely. And I don't know, I'm probably biased, but I think so much about life is just about our relationships and about connections. And, you know, my work really centers on both inter and intra-connections. So, you know, I love that, you know, my story represented kind of that connection to self, right? And your story represented that connection to others. And I think we need both in order to strengthen the other.
For sure. Agreed. So when you think about this recovering perfectionist, I think one of the, I told you this is going to come back. One of the things that I notice about recovering perfectionists is how good they are at seeing it in other people and helping create strategies around that. When have you been able to use a strategy for yourself? So one of the things I'm a huge believer in is if you are coaching others, you need to seek coaching yourself. And it doesn't have to be all the time, doesn't have to be consistent. But if you're not trying to reconnect with yourself, because we change so much, our brains, the way that we think changes over time. If we're not trying to reconnect with ourselves, how can we be a good coach to others? And we clearly don't believe in it if we're not experiencing it ourselves. So when was a time where you got to have that opportunity where you had an aha moment, whether it was when you were a coach or when you were a client of a coach?
Yeah. I mean, right now, currently, my coaching is through therapy. And so a lot of my therapy has been focused around being more aware of my perfectionism and how it shows up. So I think for me, one of the biggest pieces that I've learned in that process is self-compassion. Mm-hmm. So I think my old internal narratives were rather cruel and very mean in a way that like I would never talk to another human being. So why would I talk to myself that way? That took me a while to learn. And so just in those moments where instead of judging myself when I notice that perfectionism is coming up and taking over, it's just being compassionate with myself and understanding that these are old patterns, that they're deep neural pathways, and taking that moment to just recognize that and be still in it. And, you know, for me, I put my hand on my heart and I really have that conversation with that perfectionist part of, you know, thank you. I know why you're here. I know what you're trying to do. And just again, let it know that it's okay. Cause I think a lot of it comes from that space of, needing to feel safe or, secure. And so just knowing that like I can support it and, you know, acknowledge it, that kind of can help, just let it calm down and soften a little bit. Cause I always say recovering perfectionist, cause I fall off the wagon all the time.
Oh, right. Of course.
I don't think it's something that you ever like completely get over. So for me, it's just really learning how to be in relationship with it versus trying to reject it.
Definitely. Have you had like so I don't believe in full light bulb moments. You know, people talk about the light coming on. I believe in a dimmer switch. And there are a lot of different incidents that can contribute to that light coming on slowly and surely. And one of mine was early in my coaching when I had sent a coloring book and colored pencils to my client because he desperately needed to find that creative side of him again. And I gave him a job. I said, okay, twice this week, you're going to set a timer for 15 minutes and you're just going to color. You're just going to lose yourself in coloring. And it worked. I mean, it was such a great thing. And it was kind of just intuition for me. It's not something I had seen other people do. But what I remember most is that he had this beautiful colored page out of a John Lennon coloring book, an Imagine coloring book. So it had a lot of hearts in it. And it's funny because this is not how I saw him, but here it was. And he had this beautifully colored page. And I said, what are you going to do with it? And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, you have this beautiful colored page now. What are you going to do with it? Are you going to tear it out of the book? Are you going to put it on your fridge? I mean, what are you going to do? And he started laughing. He said, I don't know. Maybe I'll give it to my mom. Now, this man is in his 40s, right? So his mom has to be in her 60s at least. And he's like, I think I'll give it to my mom. She'll get a kick out of this. And I said, oh, that's perfect. That's perfect. I walked away from that conversation, realizing that I was very insistent that he do something with this finished product because I get external gratification from my art. And it was one of those moments that I thought, okay, this is mine. That's not his. And I wasn't contradictory or anything with him. I was just kind of persuasive. And I realized that I need to own that myself and not necessarily project it onto somebody else. So that was a huge coaching moment for me, not just for my client. So tell me about a time when that happened for you, when you had this amazing benefit to the work that you do.
I mean, I think it's so true, your point of like, part of being a coach is you hope that you're a mirror for them so that they can better see. And they're also a mirror for you. It's very, you become very aware of like, oh, I'm offering up this suggestion and I should probably take it myself.
No kidding.
So I think, that you can see that as, a reward of the job, I guess. But I think it almost happens like every time I work with someone. I think I work primarily, just by chance, not even purposefully, but with women. And so I think one of the things that's reflected back quite often is how much women tend to self-doubt themselves. Like self-doubt tends to be something that comes up so often. And I think in hearing their stories and hearing, what they're experiencing, it's made me realize my own self-doubt. I don't really love the phrase imposter syndrome, but that notion of just not trusting our own inner being. And again, I think we do the work we're meant to do for ourselves. And so I think so often when I see that reflected back to me in women, I see my own self-doubt. I see the own the time many times that I've doubted whether or not I've been capable of doing something. And it ironically gives me confidence because I'm able to see these amazing women in front of me that, I see their strengths and their beauty and their, resilience and all these wonderful things. And so it's caused me to be like, well, maybe it's time you see that in yourself too. So I think that's part of why I love the one-on-one coaching is because it is those, those moments of really being able to see another human being for who they are, and seeing yourself within that as well.
Definitely. Definitely. So, anyone out there who's looking for a coach, make sure that you find somebody who is also experiencing their own personal growth and experiences, that they're searching for it. They're continually growing because if you end up with a coach who thinks they know everything, you're probably not going to get as much out of it.
And I think that was, I mean, talking about perfectionism, like my perfectionist self forever was like, oh, I can't step into being a coach because I don't know everything, right? Like, who am I to be? And it really was that, that change of narrative and that mindset shift of no, like, you're not meant to know everything. No human does. And it really, that stems from like our head-centric, mind-centric culture, of knowing being kind of supreme. And I feel like so much of my work is more about feeling than knowing. And that was such a helpful shift for me in letting go of that perfectionist of like, oh no, it's not really about knowing everything. It's about being able to be present with another person and hold the space for them and feel with them. So that was an important shift for me.
Yes, I hear you. I think that's not unusual for people who choose to go into that line of business is to have that aha moment. Oh, wait, I don't have to know everything. I just have to ask the right questions and help them find their own knowing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I love that, being a guide for people as opposed to a teacher.
Yeah. And my training is in narrative coaching, and Dr. David Drake is kind of the founder of narrative coaching, if you will. And he talks about it as like sitting on a bench next to someone. So you're sitting with them, you're both looking out together. And I really love that metaphor of kind of sitting with versus, you know, standing over.
Right. So what made you decide to go that direction? I know I went into StrengthsFinder because I have this very strong practical side to me. And I knew when I wanted a particular certification that I wanted to be able to use that credential to get into organizations, particularly in the public sector, where I had spent almost 20 years to improve, to help people like their jobs again. And I knew that I had to have a particular credential to get my foot in the door. So what was the reason behind going into narrative coaching as opposed to there, you know, plenty of other options?
Yeah, it kind of has a long circuitous route, if you will, but my business started off, Chapter B started out as a storytelling site. So I was telling the stories of people who had made some kind of change in their life, or it happened to them and they were forced to make a change. And in exploring people's stories, what I realized is it wasn't really what they were doing to what they shifted to doing. It was more about that process of going through a transformation and stepping into what I would call like a new chapter in your life. But it kind of hit a point where I was like, okay, what am I going to do with this? How do I want to move this forward? My background is in education. And so I kind of felt like I was living two different lives where I still had a foot in the education world, but really kind of wanted to expand Chapter B. And then the 2016 presidential election happened. And as you know, most people are aware of it, you know, was really a transformational time in our country's history. And I'm a consumer of information. And so I was reading everything and listening to everything. And I had a moment where I was like, you know, I've learned so much through Chapter B of just talking to people and hearing their stories. And so I decided to do a cross-country road trip where I was traveling across the country and asking people not about their like identifiers, AKA like Republican, Democrat, but more, how do you want to be in the world? Just to kind of seek out that space of common humanity. And so I went to all of the lower 48 states in 90 days and talked to about 400 strangers. And so this is where I now get back to your original question. But in Rochester, I spoke to a woman who was just so fascinating, so lovely. And she put "be deaf" on the board when asked, how do you want to be in the world? And she was a deaf woman. And she talked about the difference between lowercase d and capital D and really embracing being a part of the deaf community. And it was such a lovely conversation. And she had recently moved to Rochester and was going to be teaching at the university level and working with a lot of deaf students. So once the microphone went off, of course, like being an educator, she started asking me all these questions and our conversation just kind of expanded. And when I told her what I was interested in doing and why I was collecting these stories, and she's like, oh, a lot of what you're talking about reminds me of narrative therapy. And I never heard of that before. I didn't even know that was a thing. So after my road trip, when I came back to Denver, I started doing research around narrative therapy and do I want to go back and do another master's. I promised myself after my first master's that I would never go back into traditional academia again.
Right.
And so, you know, did some informational interviews and then finally, like through my research, found narrative coaching. And I was like, this feels like a good in-between between full on, you know, going back to school to become a therapist, and just getting a chance to step into this world and see how I like it and test it out. And it just felt like it married my background in education and facilitation and interviewing and collecting stories with more of that realm of coaching, of really helping people navigate their own internal stories. And I kind of finally felt like I found that space where I could bring those two together. It just really resonated with me, and the approach really resonated with me, because it really isn't so much about being goal-oriented in coaching, where we're trying to hit this certain point, and more so just about like being where you are in this moment, which really to me felt important for me, because again, that recovering perfectionist can be so goal oriented, and I don't always think that's helpful.
Yeah, agree. Oh my gosh. And yet, if that's your natural way of being, you have to find a way to feed it that's healthier.
Yeah, exactly. To find that fit, you know, I feel like so often it was, you know, a lot of my work was I could do it, you know, or there were like, I had a skill in it, but I didn't really like it or enjoy it. And so I think it's, for me, it's been a process of finding that combination of things that I'm good at, but I also enjoy doing.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Double yes. It's so hard to find that sometimes, but I can bring this full circle again, is that whole idea of seeing the patterns from your childhood, the things that made you more sensitive to a certain area or a certain kind of person or a certain theme, a certain hobby, what attracted you to it? Why do you gravitate toward this particular area? And then having it come full circle, being able to see that same little girl and knowing why that was so meaningful to you, that moment in time, and how it shapes who you are today. I love that. It's perfect.
Thank you.
Kirsten, thank you so much for joining me today. It has been such a pleasure. I so appreciate your time.
Thank you. I've loved the conversation. I feel like these are those moments of where I just feel my heart happy, you know, like being able to talk about these things that I care so much about and meeting you, who is doing such important work and similar work and caring for other human beings. It makes me happy. So thank you.
Me too. I used to feel this edge of not necessarily competition, but that edge of, are we doing the same thing? Is this somebody that's competing with me? And for some reason in the last, I don't know, year or so, yeah, it took me a while, the last year or so, I see so much room here. And that is the difference between a scarcity mindset and the other, the growth mindset. It's also that realization that there's so many billions of people on this planet, and no, there's not just one of us who can make that difference. And some people need to hear the same message multiple times from different people before something changes. So there's plenty of room for all of us.
Yeah, I love that. That's been a big shift for me as well. I mean, I think I naturally have a little bit of a competitive spirit, but then I also think that's just what our capitalistic, patriarchal, white supremacist society wants to enforce. So for me, it's been an unlearning of like, I want to step into collaboration versus competitiveness. And I think, you know, the more we do that, like the healthier our world will become. Because to your point, there's so much work to be done around this. And so the more of us doing it, the better.
Totally agree. And maybe someday we'll find a collaborative effort to work on.
I love that. That would be wonderful.
Kirsten, thank you again.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great day.
Listeners, now it's your turn. What stories can you look back on as early as 6, 7, 8 years old that might inform what you're doing today, might help you uncover a pattern of a reason that you feel the way you do about something or the passion that you have for something else? I am so curious. Please send me a message. Respond on LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram or wherever you know how to reach me. Remember, you can find the show notes associated with this podcast and all of Kirsten's links, as well as information about our job interview storytelling course now available for $99. And I'm looking forward to hearing from you at elkinsconsulting.com. Thanks for listening.
Smile, what's the use of crying? You'll find that life is still worthwhile if you just smile.